Okay, Parshas Tetzaveh
begins with two psukim. V'atat Tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael v'yikhoi lech Hashem and zay zach asis lamoritz, instructions to Moshe with respect to how the oil for the menorah is going to be collected and how the people are supposed to bring it to Moshe. The interesting thing, of course, which we're not going to do, is to compare this to the other couple times in the Torah, like Parshas Emor and Parshas Baloscha, when the instructions for menorah and the gathering of the oil are given. So that's homework. But in any case, it goes on to say that in the Ol Moed, Yichutz LaBarochas Yisrael Yidus Yarochas Orad Vanami Yarbet Aboker, that Aaron and his sons are going to be setting up the candles in that place, opposite the parochas, opposite the curtains which cover the edus. What's the edus?
The Torah,
in the Aron ha'edus. Chukas alam l'dor v'samayis b'nei Israel. It is a statute, essentially, for generations from the children of Israel. Okay, so the big question that we have here, and this is kind of what the Nitziv goes off on, if you look here at my original notes before I trimmed it down to size, his opening comment in the Parsha spans basically a page and a half of this size font with the margins the way that I have it. And he's addressing the question of why this is all given to Moshe, V'atat Tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael, as an instruction. If you look in the opening few psukim of the Parsha, a couple of which we just read, you'll see that Moshe is given a lot of instruction. Now, I know that a lot of people harp on the fact that Moshe's name is not mentioned. Very few people actually harp on that. It's not that big of a deal. V'ata Moshe is all over this. But take a look at the way Nitziv puts it. U'mashayach mitzvos ha'maisa l'moshe yoter milchol Yisrael. Why is it ata tetzaves b'nei Yisrael v'ikhu elecha? Like to you. Why to you? Let's just gather it. Just like, you know, t'khu es truma si. You bring my truma and it's for me, God says, and it's, you know, for my mishkan. So, fine. So this is what he says. Al yisora davar l'madno aidei bir Od Mamor Baraba Parshazo Yatak Rabbi Lachal. So he's going to get to the Yesod. What's the Yesod of that word? The essence. Now the essence of what it is that we're trying to extract over here. Okay. Hudamar Lule Sarascha Shashuai Azavadati Bionyi. Right. Were it not for my Torah, if that, then I'd be lost essentially. Shashamar Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Yatak Rabbi Lachal Heira Lo. When God told Moshe that you are going to bring that you're going to bring your brother close, it was not good for him. In other words, what did Moshe feel? I don't want to say jealousy, but God says to him, I gave you the Torah, that without it I wouldn't have created the world. So Moshe is given, you know, everything. Why would Chazal say that it was Heira LeMoshe, that Moshe, you know, felt bad? If Moshe felt bad, you know, telling Moshe that were not for the Torah, I wouldn't have created the world. Okay, it's very nice. I gave the Torah, but giving the Torah is a one-time thing. Okay, so maybe I'll always be known as the guy who gave the Torah. But my children are not known as the people who gave the Torah. I'm not giving over a legacy directly to my family. Aaron, I am Azel. We call Kohanim B'nei Aaron. And that is something Moshe says, hey, what's going on here? Masha Enkein, a Torah nitna l'chol Yisrael kimo l'moshe l'zaro. The Torah is given to everybody. So Yishkoyach, I'm the guy who brought it down. That's right. Not that it's not a big deal, but it's given to everybody. There isn't an exclusivity here. So Moshe was the messenger who brought it. No connection to his children. He says that the Torah is the whole purpose for the Mishkan, and it is the main reason for the Hashras Shechina. Ba b'shefa al yidei entzos shnei kli kodesh. It's able to come down through, I don't want to say the medium of two of the Klei Kodesh, but what it is, but the way it is demonstrated, let's say the way that it is seen essentially is through the Aron and the Menorah, through the Ark and the candelabra. and each one has a different job. Ha'aron ba liyud adibros shebichsav. Okay, what's the purpose of the aron? Right, yud. I think we had that. I don't know if we had that word last week. Ol moed, one of the interpretations of the old moed or edus, that I think it was an etzivu mention. Maybe I saw it somewhere else. Maybe I saw it in Rabbi Dan, in an article of Rabbi Dan. I don't remember. But anyway, he says that the destination of the dibros is in the ark. Shebichsav v'gam letzivu bekabala baal peh. And there's also a commandment about what you're supposed to accept. Baal peh kmo shekasati le'al chafei chafeis. So he says, I talked about this a little bit in Parshas Truma, but this doesn't have all the pilpul v'achidush she'adam yochol l'chadesh mi'atzmo dvar halacha she'enu mekubal. What is pilpul? Deep discussion. No. It's discussion and it's analysis and trying to figure things out. And chidush is new ideas, but that is not in the Torah shebichsav. Where do you have pilpul and chidush? Torah shebichsav. It is what it is. But it's the written word. But where do you have all that pilpul and chiddush? We constitute all that into the arena of what we call Torah Shebichsav. L'zeh koach hanifla shenikra Talmud. Nitan koach hamenorah. Asher nichlal bo shevachachmos. Okay, the Netziv talks about this. I remember when I was in Rabbi Talmud here, he gave us a word. And maybe it's the reference which he makes. If you look towards the end, the part that I gave you, where he says, the last line, I know Lahan Lama Testament, I didn't have a chance to look it up. But he talks about the Shiva Chachmos. Right, what does the menorah have on it? Six branches, but in one in the middle. Right. And they're representative of the Shiva Chachmos. What are the Shiva Chachmos? Different areas of knowledge that is gifted to the world. You think that the Jews only have Torah? We're allowed to have philosophy and astronomy and mathematics and different sciences. That's what the Shiva Chachmos are. I don't remember what the exact seven are, but it's talking about knowledge of the world, and I'm pretty sure that the three that I mentioned are certainly in there. The Kol Kolchos and Idris Lepapul Torah. So all of that is symbolized through Menorah. V'chol Zeh B'chav Torim U'Prachim. And it's all included in the different decorations that make up that which we call Menorah. Ad the Yisav Reishis Rabbah, Perak Tzadi Aleph, Rabbi Tarfon, Meshasha, Yom Shomea, Davar Matukana, Yomer Kaftor Ferach. That when Rabbi Tarfon would hear something which was correct, he would say, oh, that's Kaftor Ferach. What's Kaftor Ferach? It's a decoration. But what kind of a decoration is it? It's a decoration of that which represents the Torah Shabbal Peh. The Siach Rabban Shal Yisrael.
Rashi?
No. Moshe. The Lamdenu. So what we're learning is that if there's a new idea which comes out, or maybe it's referring to Rabbi Tarfon, I don't know, that when somebody comes up with a new idea, what he's teaching us is something which is beautiful through the imagery of the Kaftor v'Ferach, just as the Kaftor v'Ferach are decorations to the menorah and they beautify the menorah. That is what a chiddush of a Dvar Torah is. V'alkein, v'bayi sheni, sh'rabi yeshivos, v'amidu talmidim harbe, l'havayos de'abaye v'rava, sh'hu ha-talmud, that during the Second Temple, when there were a lot of yeshivas, and there were a lot of students, and people were learning, and what are they coming up with? The chigushim of abaye v'rava, etc. That is a talmud. Sh'mahachi nischazik koach ha-menorah al-yidei neis de'chanaka. So he says that, it's a great idea in retrospect to say, why was the menorah the symbol of Hanukkah? It's like the Maccabees said, a great return to Torah learning. Exactly. So essentially what he's saying is that when, right, what is it? The truth is that all the instructions, the point is that the instructions come through Moshe. So he's harping on the Aron and the Menorah more than anything else because of their symbolism, what they represent with respect to Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. But the point is that here we're talking about the instructions for how to light the Menorah. You're going to be giving that over because the fact of the matter is, what do we call it? Adayom Hazeh. We call it Torah Moshe. We call it Torah Moshe. And Moshe, you're the one who gave it over. Yes, it's your zchus, and maybe it's not the same kind of legacy of Kahuna, but it is a darn good legacy. And don't feel shortchanged, because that is not the case at all. Now, were Chazal right? Did Moshe really feel that way? One of my favorite words from the Slonimer Rebbe is where he talks about where the humility of Aaron, where another idea, which is why is Aaron was being told to Atah Krevei Lecha, so Krav El HaMizbech, rather, when it's Krav El HaMizbech in Parsha Shemini, Aaron was hesitating, and Moshe says, why are you hesitating? Lekach Nivcharta, you were chosen for this. And the Slonim Rebbe says that you hesitate is why you were chosen, because you're such an anav. And so the Slonim Rebbe asks the question, if anivus, if being humble, is the criteria to be the coming gadol, so isn't Moshe anav mikol adam? Moshe is the greatest anav. So why isn't Moshe the kohen gadol? So the Slonim Rebbe distinguishes between two kinds of anivus. It's such an amazing insight. And he says there's two kinds of anivus. There's humility, which comes from seeing yourself in comparison to the Ribbono Shel Olam and recognizing that you're nothing, which is what Moshe experienced, because Moshe was on the top of the mountain and says, wait a second, I'm nothing. Okay. The other kind is seeing your own humility through the depths of sin and somehow recognizing that I'm nothing and doing tshuva for that. And that is what Aaron did in the golden calf.
Right.
And the Slonim Rebbe says Moshe had no clue what that anivus was like, because he never went down that road. Okay, he was certainly in that story, he was on the top of the mountain. So he says that's why, because Aaron, you feel you're unworthy. You feel you're unworthy because you know how low you sank. That's why you are Nivcharta, because you also, you bounce back.
It's
amazing.
Because, you know, Aaron's ongoing legacy, as you said, the Kahuna, everyone's a Kohen. Mm-hmm. Moshe's ongoing legacy is that every Kiddush is attributed to him.
Right.
And, you know, it's a very powerful legacy.
Yeah, so you should have told Moshe Rabbeinu, because he would have appreciated your chizuk.
You would have perked him up.
He wouldn't have felt so bad if you had only been there. What were you waiting for? You had to wait to be born a few thousand years later. Okay, all right. So that's the opening. Now the rest of what I want to do tonight are things which in the past have kind of bothered me, and in the context of their bothering me, I found that the Nitziv said something. So obviously I gave you a lot more than we can actually get to. So I am going to kind of skip around a little bit. I'm not skipping around. I mean, I'm not going to like jump back and forth. But in the order of the things which we have, I want to draw to your attention the questions which I have. Now, I will say as just an overall comment, the theme which we just saw, where the Nitziv points to the Aron and the Menorah and says that they represent, for example, Torah Sheh Bichsav and Torah Sheh Baal Peh, is a kind of theme that appears throughout. Of course, in this Parsha, it's not the Klei HaMishkan, it's not the vessels of the Mishkan which are discussed here, it's the Big Day Kahuna, the clothing of the Kohanim. And so the Gemara talks about how each one is representative of something, where it brings atonement for different averos for each one. I never remember which one is which, but it's on account of that idea that he brings a number of the chidushim which he brings up, often harping back to that theme that there is something deeper going on than just simply, oh, these are the clothing for the kohanim in the Mishkan. What do they represent? A, for the kohanim, and B, for the people whom the kohanim are representing. Okay, so the first thing which we're going to look at now, yeah, and again, I'm okay. Okay, let's take a look at Lechavod LeSifaris. Okay, pasuk base. So the pasuk in the Chumash says, "V'asisa v'kodesh la'aron achicha Lechavod LeSifaris." You're going to make clothing for Aaron, your brother, and for honor and for glory. Take a look at what the Nitziv says. When we're getting to this idea that Aaron is going to be sanctifying himself and he's going to be behaving in a manner of chassidus, right? Piety and separation from everybody else. That doesn't really work unless people actually regard him in that way. But they shouldn't be thinking that in a way which
then he becomes haughty
as a result. Mishum ha'achi hayu ha'bigadim l'to'eles shehaya be'enei Yisrael l'chavod l'sifaris. Okay, so in other words, what's the point of the clothing? If Aaron gets up there and he's wearing the same clothes or he's wearing a nice suit, right? So, you know, you have this lahavdil, and I'm not saying this in any way which should be misunderstood. But, you know, on Shabbos, the rabbi, the gabbai, the baal tefillah, we're all dressed the same. Okay? You have in some place, lahavdil, I mean, you know, a Catholic priest wears robes, wears a collar, looks different than everybody else. Okay, there are some in different denominations of Judaism. Sometimes the rabbi does wear like a bigger hat. Or once upon a time, it was more popular with chazanim, right, that they would wear a big yarmulke or whatever, a chazan's hat, whatever you want to call it. And what's the point of it? Was it to elevate the chazan? Well, if you want to just take a short jump from what's being said here, it's to elevate the position. In other words, the people should say, oh, this person is representing me in davening. You know, if the rabbi were to do that, people should say, oh, that's the rabbi. We're going to, you know, at least honor the position, even if, you know, no matter what we say under our breath, we're going to honor the position. Okay? And similarly for Aaron, v'hevinu mizek yichafetz Hashem yikaro, that they would see that Aaron, look at the clothing that God designed for him. Amazing. This man is royal. Ro'i li'os merkava l'shchina. And he should be a chariot, but meaning a vessel essentially for the pathway. Thank you. That's a better word for the Shechina. V'cheinu b'chol kohen gadol, and that's the way it would be. Not just Aaron, but every kohen gadol. Masha'en came big day kuhuna the kohen hediot, which is not the case of the regular clothes of the kohen. Lo ya l'chavod l'sifaris. It's not now. It's not to say, not to say that they're not honorable and glorified clothing, but they're not described that way. What is Allah Migbaos Shaal Rosham? What is their hats? Okay? So that's a distinction which is made. And again, it's more for the benefit of the people that they should recognize that this person, on account of his position, is meant to be revered in a different kind of way. Okay, now the reason I showed you the next one is a motion. Well, the Kohen's hat is called a mitznefes. It's the regular Kohen whose house is called a migbaat. So, I mean, there are different. You know, you could look at the artistic renderings to see how people feel that these things were turban. They were essentially turbans on the head. So, I'm going to leave that for the artist to explain. Now, Moshe is told, I want you to tell the Chachmei Lev. So the Netziv asks a question, which is really a relatively contemporary question. When we talk about people who have, what's Chachmei Lev?
Right.
Wise of heart.
Wise of heart.
Okay,
wise
of brain. So what should it be? Wise of brain. Once upon a time, people were of the view, you know, you have to love Hashem b'chol levavucha v'chol nafshecha. Now, we know that the heart might have palpitations, but all feelings of love, where do they really come from?
The brain.
Right, everything's the brain. The heart pumps blood. That's, you know, and it's the source of life for sure. But in terms of actually, now does the word moach ever appear in the Torah?
I don't think it does.
So he says, "Chachma inu koma b'leiv ki moach." The Netziv says, "Ela koma kom tchsiv chachma leiv habir yiras Hashem." Okay, and that I thought was a nice interpretation because he's saying that chachma leiv has nothing to do with smarts. It has to do with yiras Hashem. And while Yiras Hashem could certainly come from a place in the brain as well, it really is a feeling, a tchusha, right? And in a sense, it is an emotion. And while, again, the emotion certainly is processed through the brain, when people talk about their feelings, where do they point to?
I mean, feelings is the heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Heart.
Okay, yeah, that's the point. That's his little chiddush here. Okay, on Asher Milei Sivru HaChachma. So this I thought was a fascinating chiddush. Okay, look at what the pasuk says. Go back to the pasuk.
Well, I should have said Malei.
Eile Habigadim. No. Where is it? Pasuk Gimel. Ve'atad Nebrel Kol Chachmei Lev Asher Milei Sivru HaChachma. So Chachmei Lev is plural. What's Milei Siv?
Singular.
That I filled him, right, with the spirit of wisdom. V'yasu Es Bigdei Aron Kadosh L'Chan Oli. So maybe if I had thought about it, I would have come up with this, but I didn't think about it. So Netziv made me think about it. He says, "Hashem milei siv, Hashem milei simi bai." It should say, if you're talking about the Chachmei Lev, if you're talking about these wise people, it should be in the plural. El Koy El Aaron. He says, Asher Milei Siv. What do they have to do? They have to do what they have to do because Milei Siv. I have given Aaron a Ruach Chachma. Okay, then, and what's the point? Sheidaber Moshe L'Chachmei Lev, Shemilei Siv Aaron Ruach Chachma. That's what the Pasuk means. That Moshe has to tell the Chachmei Lev that I have filled him, meaning Aaron, with a Ruach Chachma, and therefore they have to make the clothing for him in this way. Kol Zeh Hakdama L'Sefer D'Krav Asus B'Gdei Aaron L'Kadsho. Okay, skip to the part which is in bold. U'Vasheru Davar Shebelev Alkein Igdim L'Mar L'Hem Asher Milei Siv Aaron Ruach Chachma. The people needed to understand, since this is something in the heart. What does it mean it's in the heart? You can't see it, right? He will therefore know and understand what the role of the clothing is to influence him. And also Hechna Asu, and how, I don't think Hechna Asu means how they're made, but how they are meant to do that job.
Right.
And this is why Moshe needed to tell the Chachmei Lev and not Bezalel. Why? Bezalel was a genius in the how to make, but not in the how to inject meaning. Especially in the case of the Big Day Kahuna, which was supposed to influence Aaron in such a profound way, that was not Bezalel's strength. Bezalel's strength was the technicality of, you know, the goldsmith, the silversmith, the coppersmith, and all of the weaving and everything else that was supposed to be done, technicalities. But here, it was on a much different level, and that's why Moshe is the one who's telling the Chachmei Lev, not instructing them how to make the garments, but he's instructing them what emotions and feelings and everything else needs to go into the making of these garments beyond the actual, you know, technicalities of weaving, etc. Okay. Again, that's just paying attention to the word. And it's the vav, Asher Milei Siv. No, I thought it was the Chachmei Lev, Asher Milei Siv,
right.
You know, referring to the Chachmei Lev. But
singular?
I thought about it, maybe I would have come up with the same, or at least with the point that Milei Siv was referring to Aaron, not everything else that he added.
I never thought that.
But that's the
pluralizes.
Oh really?
Yes.
Okay. So so there you go. So obviously, Unculus is ignoring the vav.
Correct.
And he's saying that the vav is wrong. Okay. All right. We're not going there. Okay.
Okay. Earlier text.
All right, now we're going to go to. All right, okay. Again, like I said before, I'm going to skip a little bit. I want to show you. I'm going to take out the essence. So one of the thoughts. Okay, what's this one? I put two checks here. Okay. This is one I didn't. Okay, let's look at Pasuk Chafal. Pasuk Chafalev is now we're in the realm of the Choshen. Okay, so a few things which are unclear in the text about the Choshen. So look at Pasuk Aleph. It describes how they're going to be 12 stones, four rows, and the Pasuk identifies what each stone is supposed to be. And I love how Art Scroll does this. What's the translation for each word? Art Scroll chooses not to translate and says, it's the Odem, Pitida, and the Barekes, and, you know, etc. Doesn't translate the words, which is actually a good move because they're not going out on a limb. They're just saying that's the stone. Good luck to anybody else who wants to try to figure it out. But anyway, Pasuk Chafalut, V'avanim Tien Al Shmos Bnei Yisrael Shtei Misrei, and the stones are going to be on the names of the Bnei Yisrael, 12 names, Al Shmosam Pituchecho Sam Yish Al Shmos Tiena. Now I'm not going to get into how it's done. There's a debate as to whether they were engraved or embossed. Okay, we'll leave that for a different conversation. But the question is, what are the names that are being put on here? So if you look quickly at the first comment in Pasuk Chafalef, you'll see towards the end of the line that he says Kasuv ala Evan Arishona Avram Yitzchak Yaakov and Shifte Yeshurun ala Evan Achrona. So there are also different interpretations as to what this means. The way that I remember seeing it, I don't know if I ever read this, but I certainly saw it in an artistic rendering, and probably learned from a Rebbe in elementary school that each of the stones was supposed to have six letters, And for the Shvatim, that didn't have six letters in their name, so letters from Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Shiftei Yishurun were added to the names of the tribes so that each stone would have six letters. Obviously, he's saying something different here, that Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and you can imagine how many letters are on that first stone, according to this view, and how many letters on the last stone, which presumably has the name Binyamin on it, and Binyamin has the most letters of all the tribes, aside from, I think, Zvulun, who also has six if you write it with both vavs. So, you know, Binyamin and Shiftei Yishurun. What does that even mean? Okay, so I'm going to leave that out of the discussion, but you see that he at least mentions that. But look what he says for Pituchei Chosam Ishal Shmo. Tziur Shal Chosam Al Shem Kol Echad Kamoshe Kasuv Shal Yeruvein Chosmo B'tziur Dudaim Yehuda Aryeh Yosef Shor V'chadomeh. So you ever see in some of these shuls when they have, windows or some other kind of artistic something, and they have a symbol for each tribe. Yeah. And there's an assumption that the symbol for each tribe is also on the flag of each tribe, okay? And there are different interpretations for some of the tribes as to what they were. You look at the Midrash, there are conflicting views. Yeah. And that's why the windows that, or whatever the decorations that you see sometimes have different images for different tribes, because there are different views. But he's saying that in addition to the letters, each tribe owned the stone by having his symbol on it.
Like a picture?
That's what he said.
Like a picture?
Look what he just said. Tziur shel chosem al shem kol echad. Shaya Ruven chosem ob tziur dudaim. Yehuda Aryeh. So Ruven was the flowers. Yehuda that he brought to his mother. Yehuda was a lion. Yosef is an ox, etc. That was also put on there. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen. I'm trying to remember where I saw this more. Maybe it was in the some of those cemeteries that you go to in Eastern Europe, where or maybe it's something in Queens. I don't remember. But people who are from the former Soviet Union, believe it that way.
Oh yeah.
You know, they have these black shiny tombstones,
of themselves,
and they have pictures of themselves, and they have some kind of image like a flower, a rose, or something like that. You know, I mean, a lot of cemeteries they'll offer if you're a Kohen, so they'll give you split fingers. If they're a Levi, they'll have like a washing hands. If it was a woman, they have they'll often have candles. Some people put a Jewish star, whatever it may be. In Europe, you could see actually a lot of symbols on the graves. I once had to do in a class I took at NYU on sociology. We had to study gravestones, so I found a lot of interesting things. And if there was a woman who died young, especially if she was unmarried, so the symbol on the thing was candlesticks that were cut, and the top part of the candle was like off down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, cut in half, and like part of it like fell off, just to demonstrate that the opportunity to light was just cut short. So and there are other things. In other words, there's symbolism in them. So obviously that's not what we're talking about here, but it's that idea that there is a symbol which is representative of the tribe, which he is saying was also, that's what Pituchei Chosam Ish Al Shemo, that each person who has a symbol, right, his crest, if you will, or his signature ring, was also on his name, or on the stone which bore his name. So I've never saw that before. I thought that was interesting.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Hayu Alev Aharon. What's Pasuk Lamed? So now we're skipping a little bit. Now we're in the probably in the Urim V'Tumim area, where it says, yeah, Pinasata El Choshen Mishpat Es Haurim V'Hatumim V'Hayu Alev Aharon. Right? Is that the Pasuk?
Mm-hmm.
So no. B'nei Yisrael V'Choshen Mishpat. Alibo. Oh no! I go back on pasuk. V'nasa Aaron Hashemos v'nei Yisrael b'choshen mishpat alibo v'ol hakodesh. Aaron's going to carry their names on his heart. V'zikaron l'pnei Hashem. Tamid is remembrance to God always. V'nasa tal choshen mishpat yisarim v'asutumim v'ayu alibo Aaron. So there are two things which are on Aaron's heart. One is the names of the Bnei Yisrael, and the second thing, I'm in pasuk lamed on page 470, and the second thing is the name of God. They're going to be on Aaron's heart as well when he comes before God. So there are really three things which are being described here as being on Aaron's heart. One is the names of the Bnei Israel. The second one is the Urim and the Tumim. And the third one is Mishpat Bnei Israel. Okay? So aside from that being the physical presence of these items on Aaron's chest, literally, It's also the symbolism of Aaron carrying the burden of Bnei Yisrael literally on his heart. So that's one image which has always been compelling to me. And look what how the Netziv puts it. Yehei Zichus Shema Mefurash, on the bottom of page 2, where it says Lamed. Because Aaron is carrying in the Urim V'Tumim God's ineffable name, which is written, and that's what gave the Urim V'Tumim its power. Its power to light up the Choshen. That should serve as a Messiah. What's a Messiah? Somebody, a helper to do the judgment of an Israel properly, day in and day out. V'nasa Aaron. What does it mean that Aaron's carrying? This is a burden that Aaron's carrying. This is also a part of burden of the role. And I think that there's a lot to be said about the specifics of the garments that Aaron is wearing, that they are particularly designed to make it that it's hard for Aaron to lose sight of what his job is. Meaning, like for example, we wear a talis katan. You wear tzitzis, right? And the Torah says, "Reisem oso zechartem is kol mitzvos Hashem asisem oso." And you're supposed to see them and remember the mitzvos, etc. Velos asur achrei levavchem. Okay, what's the problem? If you wear it under your clothes and you wear it tucked in, you can't see it. It's very easy to forget. Which is why some people wear their tzitzis out, and hopefully that's a better reminder, which is why when you wear a talis, certainly when you're wearing a talis, it's a lot easier to see your talis and to not sin, right, ideally. And I think people are pretty good. The worst sin that people probably do is they talk during davening when they're wearing the talis, I would imagine. Unless the talking is Lashon Hara, but that's a different conversation. Okay, anyway, but the point is that when he's wearing these garments, I mean, how could he not? How could he ever lose sight of the fact of what his job is? You're carrying the Urim V'Tumim, you're carrying the Choshen on your chest. It's there, it's banging against you every step you make. It's out in the open. You know that people are looking at you. You know that everybody sees you. You know they're thinking, Kohen Gadol. And even if the Kohen Gadol, the first time he puts it on, says, oh my God, I don't belong wearing these clothing, you know, eventually it grows in you and you realize, I have to fill a role. You know, unless you're dealing in the Tzeduki time. But you know what the Mishnah in Yoma says about the Kohen Gadol, that they would ask, that they would say, you're going to do it right the way we told you. And then he would cry and they would cry. He would cry because they suspected him, and they would cry that they had to suspect him. But in the end of the day, he did it right. And if he didn't, you know, suffered as a result. So
in Florida, we feel this is just on a hot day. So
it's a good all right, alibi. So but look what he says. It should always be on his heart, and he should always be feeling it. And he should remember them in his tefillah, lifnei Hashem tamid, in front of Hashem always. Right, and the Urim V'Tumim and the names should all be serving as a reminder and as an assistance in the tefillah which he is. All right, so we're going to skip to pasuk membeis, but before we do that, I want to show you something which in the pesukim wise we kind of missed. Well, we did miss. Okay, go back to pasuk to the bottom of page 464. Okay, it's actually the very beginning of the parsha. Okay, how many big day kahuna are there for every kohen?
There's four and eight, no?
Four and eight for the kohen gadol, right? So take a look at the pasuk at the bottom of page 464. Count with me. These are the clothes that you're supposed to make. Choshen, ephod, me'il, kesones tashbeitz, mitznefes, Ve'avneit, okay. Ve'asu v'gdei
hakadosh
le'aron. So six. What's missing? There are two missing. What's missing are the mechnasayim and the tzitz. The tzitz. Okay. So we're not going to have the time to go into the tzitz per se, but the tzitz is very symbolic, and we're just going to leave that for what it is for now. But take a look at pasuk membeis. Okay. Pasuk membeis. We're told. That they have to be wearing these pants, which are essentially underwear, okay? They have to be wearing them. And through wearing them, they will not be culpable or guilty of possibly exposing themselves, and therefore they will not be considered as having sin. Lo yisu avon v'mesu, lest they die, okay? Take a look at what he says. Mechnasayim, hema p'kusim mimala shari big de kahuna. Mechnasayim are the lowest of the low. Why? Lower of the clothing. Because they're underwear. The Shari Begadim Bo Lakodesh. Or Bo Lakadesh. It'll be Shun Moshe B'Pam Rishonah. Moshe dressed them the first time. Uludoros Lav Shuba Azara. And they're going to be wearing them in the Azara. Masha Enkim Mechasayim Bo Lachasos Basar Erva. But the Mechasayim, their job is to literally serve as underwear. Okay? Mishamachi Lav Shubachol V'lo Nechmasu Arumim. They put them on elsewhere, not in the Kodesh arena, and they came in, they put them on themselves, v'lo Moshe Pilbishan. Okay, and Moshe did not dress them. Now, where do we have the pasuk where it says Moshe dresses them? Take a look at pasuk. Hey, on page 474. Our own sons, you're going to wash them. You're going to take the clothing. Pasuk. V'hilbashta es Aaron es hakutones. You're going to dress Aaron with the ketones. It's telling him how you're going to dress him. With Santam it's nefes al rosho. You're going to put his hat on. With Satas nezer kodesh al nefes. You're going to put his that's the crown. Is it sits? Okay, and you're going to do that. You're going to put it on his head, and you're going to anoint him. Ve'as banav takriv yilvashtam kutanos pasuches. You're going to bring his sons, and you're going to dress them. V'chagarto sam avneit, and you're going to put the avneit belt on all of them. V'chavashto lahem migbaos, and you're going to put the migbaos on all of them. In other words, you are going to be dressing them. And what's left out of that list of the things that Moshe is going to be putting on them? The michlasayim. Why? Because
underwear.
No, because it's underwear, because they can do it themselves, and because they can come in.
It's not seen.
What?
It's probably not seen.
It's not seen. The ksonas goes down to the ankles. Right. But the point is that it's not his. It is not their job to walk into the mikdash naked and have Uncle Moshe put their underwear on. They can handle that themselves. Okay. What?
They're older than that.
Too. Yes, they're older than that. Exactly. Okay. Take a look at pasuk vav in the Nitziv. Es nezer akodesh al mitznefes kvar biarnu dahai al eno al mikomi ela perusho shem mitznefes hayamami des nezer shlo yipol merusho that. The way that the mitznefes was situated, and the way that the tzitz had these tchela straps which went over it and was tied around it, the mitznefes allowed for the crown to not fall down and to not fall out of place. Again, we're not going into what the tzitz represents. But there is a lot of information about that as well. Okay. The next thing I want to show you is probably Pasuk Lamatas. Okay? Pasuk Lamatas. And I'm sorry I give you all this stuff. I just get so excited when I go through this. I'm like, oh, this is good. Ooh, this one. Ooh, this one's good too.
This becomes better. And then,
and then you realize, I can't get to everything. Okay, so the one which I'm skipping, the big one, which is that they put blood on the ear and on the thumb and on the big toe. You know what? Let's just look at the very end of that one. Okay, the Yoser Yesh Lasbir de Inyan Ozen. Do you see where it is? Go back a page. I apologize. Go back a page. It's three lines from the bottom. Three lines from the bottom. Okay, so he's explaining here. What the symbolism is of the ear and the thumb and the toe, okay, and why they put blood on each of those things from the korban which is being offered as an inaugural korban, and he talks about the korbanos, he talks about the power, he talks about the significance of the egel, and of course one of the points which he also makes here is that before the egel event. When the tzibui, when the command was being given, Aaron and his sons were equal in segulas hakuhuna. But what happened after the fact is because Aaron was moser nefesh for Israel in the way which he did, he was elevated very significantly. Okay, that's just something which he talks about earlier on in that paragraph. But here's what we're up to. V'yoter yesh lasbir de'inyan ozen uboen yad v'regel. Are you with me? Yeah, the third to last line, and now we're on the second to last line on page 3. Hulag biyavizek koach hashmiya hamevi lidei maisa biyad. So it's meant to elevate the strength of listening, which brings about the action which is done with the hand. So that covers for the ozen, the ear, and that covers for the yad. The hamaisa may really day haregel sheyaseh legavoa gam b'li kavana, that the foot should also be elevated. And you know, it's like when you know, sometimes you drive and you kind of don't realize how you get where you get to because it's rote instinct, right? Instinct's driving you. That the foot should just be guiding. El kamoa regel shenasa tevasheni. What does that mean? Second nature, right? Ve'alze nimshal bohen regel. By the way, the tahara process of the mitzora is also includes this kind of ritual. To raise them up. Shevach, right? Utaknam, and to bring a tikkun based on the value of what needs to be done. The vaday musaro shel mitzora b'ofen acher shel musar kohen. And it's what the mitzora is going through is a very different, you know, a ritual than what the kohen is going through in terms of where they've been and where they're looking to be. Machinami ein musaro shel kohen gadol dom the kohen edya. Right, whatever the kohen gadol is going through is different than the kohen heyer is going through. Vayimish kastavti b'midbar ches tesvav. Right? The higher level that a person is at, the more tahara and kedusha a person needs to aim to achieve. And that's why there's a distinction made between the doing of this ritual to Aaron specifically and to Aaron's sons specifically, and there is that separation made in the process of what's described here. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, just as an example, if you look at Pasuk Chaf, it's describing doing this to Aaron's sons. Mm-hmm. And if you look, I don't remember, I think it was earlier. I don't remember if it was earlier or afterwards, where you do that for Aaron. Okay, in other words, there is that distinction which is being made. And by the way, you know, any real quote unquote tzaddik of our generation, or really of any generation, will be the first one to tell you, as much as everybody reveres and as much as everybody says, "Oh, what a tzaddik," the person will say, "I'm not a tzaddik, I'm a sinner. I clap on Yom Kippur like everybody else, probably even more than everybody else." And that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. That the higher level that you're at, the higher level of scrutiny you're going to give to yourself, and the higher level of of being hard on yourself for your smallest infractions, will in fact be the case. Because the real gedolim, what are the real gedolim? The real gedolim are humble. The real gedolim say, I understand that you ask me questions and I do my best to answer them, you know, and it's okay to say I learn a lot of Torah. That's not an arrogant statement. But to couch it in a realm of humility, that's extremely important. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next one. All right, so Pasuk Lamatas. Look at Pasuk Lamatas. I know we're jumping, but this is important. Okay, we have a pasuk here. Well, we'll start at the beginning of Shishi. V'zeh asher ta'aseh l'mizbeach on page 480. V'zeh asher ta'aseh l'mizbeach v'asimnei shana shnayim l'yom tamid. Now remember, this is the inaugural ritual for the Mishkan. And they're being told that they're going to be doing this. And some of the commentaries make a clear distinction. Rashi, for example, in Parshas Pinchas, makes a clear distinction between this one and you're about to see a pasuk that you're all familiar with, okay, that we're all familiar with. And it's because this is a ritual for inaugurating the Mishkan, which makes it what's called a mitzvah l'sha'ata. It's a one-time deal. Maybe it's not just a one-time deal, but it's a relatively one-time deal versus a mitzvah Lidoros. Olamis Lidoros. And Lidoros, right? A mitzvah for generations. So look what it says. You're going to bring 2 1-year-old lambs as a tamid. Okay, familiar with the tamid offering? What's the tamid offering? The daily offering. Okay, and how is the tamid offering defined? Esakeves ha'echad taseva boger, esakeves ha'sheni taseva in harbaim. Okay, familiar with that pasuk? We read it on Rosh Chodesh. Esakeves ha'echad taseva boger. Is it keves ha'echad or keves ha'echad? Yeah, it's a keves ha'sheni taseva in harbaim. So you see that there are differences here between the way it's described here and the way that it's described there in Parshas Pinchas. Visham, the Nitziv says, Ksiv Echad. Here it's Esakeves Ha Echad Taseh Boker, Vesakeves Hasheni. So there in Parshas Pinchas, I'll just double check, I'll read you the pasuk. You don't have to all turn there, but what does it say? It's in Chamishi. It says, Esakeves Echad Taseh Boker, Vesakeves Hasheni Taseh Bin Arboin. Okay? Esakeves, no hey. Right? Vyarnusham, the Baal Lami, Shalo Ba'u Shnei Temidim Ke'echad. Right, and what we explain there is that the two tamidim, these tamid offerings, are not brought at the same, or they're not brought together. It doesn't mean that they're not both brought in the morning. Obviously, they're not both brought in the morning. That's the instruction. The instruction is that you offer one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Okay, but the idea is shnayim would imply that they come, that they're brought to the mishkan or to the mikdash together. In the case of Parshas Pinchas, remember how on Yom Kippur you have the two goats? So the two goats are brought at the same time when they would do the lottery to determine which one is Hashem and which one is Lazazel. That's what it means, that they're brought together. Obviously, one of them is slaughtered and the other one is later on sent off Lazazel, not at the same time. But that's the point. The point is that you bring one in the morning and you bring one in the afternoon. Not that you bring them both at the same time, and you have one of them hanging out until it's time for him to be the offering in the afternoon. The fact that it says ha'echad, it means that there's a combination of some kind, that the two are brought in at the same time. Whichever one is the better one of them, the more choice one of them, serves as the offering for the morning, and the second one serves as the offering for the afternoon. The shame shehu ba leparnasa ein alayla tafel layom klal. One which stands for parnasa. The Laila, the evening one, is not Tafel Liyom. Ain a Laila Tafel Liyom Klal, Ushnehem Shavin B'Toel Asam. So Sham, it's Sham. Vatam the Sham, Shubala Parnasa. So in other words, that in Pinchas, the Tamidin are meant to represent a Parnasa. It's a daily offering for Parnasa. Masha'in Ken Khan Shababashvil Yud. That's another important distinction between this. Yeah, the description looks the same, but here the purpose of these Tamidin are not for Parnasa, but they are Bishvil Yud. What are they doing? They're essentially establishing that this new building is going to be a place where God's presence is going to dwell. And as we saw earlier with respect to the Aron and the Menorah, and I mentioned at the time that this is a theme which he mentions in other, with regard to other parts of the mission as well. Iker hayud the Torah shebichsav lo haya ela bayom. That the idea of making this place a destination of Torah shebichsav is only for the daytime. Ubalaylo hu moil hayamoil the gir sechel Torah shebalpeh. Right? Isn't there a halacha like that? You're not supposed to learn Torah shebichsav at night. You familiar with that one? Because in the nighttime, right? You're familiar with that. You're not familiar with that because nighttime is dedicated for Torah shebalpeh. Because you can't, you know, reading too much at night with a candle is not good for your eyes. So you just, you know, you talk to Harish Rabbi. Ushteya tulios, and these different purposes, kshuros zebazet, vein tuelos zebelizet, but yikru Harish Rabbi. He says the main goal of the representation of the Mishkan at this point in time is for the Harish Rabbi Chassav. Bishabal peh tafila, and the Harish Rabbi peh is secondary to it. That the success of the Bnei Yisrael, I guess this is referring to in the Midbar, is not dependent. They don't need the Bnei Yisrael. Don't need parnasa. When they're traveling in the wilderness, what is their parnasa come from? It's hashgacha pratis shel kadosh baruch hu. Who rishon who manegas hashemesh lashpia mashen ken kan loy in hashemesh klal. So here, it's not the purpose of the tamid, right? Because we're here only establishing the mishkan. So it's just what I find important, at least to distinguish, is the comparison between what's taking place in the inauguration of the Mishkan versus in the actual day-to-day of the Mishkan, and the way that these two psukim have a small, subtle difference, which he's harping on, that letter hey, to distinguish between the karbonos, A, how they were brought to the Mishkan in the first place, and B, what they in fact do represent.
So all this from Ha'echad versus Echad?
I don't know if it's all this from Ha'echad. He could be throwing in other information, but he is pointing out a significant difference in terms of the way these animals are brought, or how they're brought together versus not together, from the hay of Ha'echad. Okay? Okay, if you look at Pasuk Membeis, the thing which I gave you there in Pasuk Membeis, Leber Elech Hashem, Kedei Ledaber Parshias HaTorah Shu Ayur Ayotar Gavoh Shafshar. I mean, again, that's that same thing, that the Torah Shebechsav is the ultimate destination, first and foremost, of the Mishkan. And you have to remember that before they can learn Torah Shebal Peh, right, you know, they have to learn this new book, which they're, what's Naseh V'Nishma? Naseh, whatever's written. V'Nishma, the Torah Shebal Peh. And so, how do you do whatever's written? Well, first you got to learn that, and then you can start delving into the realm of the Torah Shebal Peh. Okay. V'yadu k'ani Hashem. Let's go to that. I put it in highlight, so that's a good one. Okay. If you look at the last two psukim on page 480, you're going to see v'shachan tibasoch b'nei Yisrael v'ayisi lahem l'elohim, that I'm going to dwell amongst the Bnei Israel, I'm going to be a God for them. They will know that I'm God, that I am Hashem, their God. Asher Otzesi Osam Eretz Yisrael, who took them out of Egypt, l'shochni b'sacham, to dwell amongst them. Ani Hashem Elohim, I am Hashem, their God. So this, of course, you know, if you're paying attention to the words, you'll see this concept of God v'shachanti b'soch Bnei Israel, or l'shochni b'sacham, and that's reminiscent of one of the opening psukim in Parshas Truma of v'asali mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. And many point out that this is kind of like a bracket or you know, bracket ending to this significant unit of the creation of, or at least the instruction rather, of the items for the Mishkan, both the Kelim and the Krashim, etc., and the Chatzer, which we saw in last week's Parsha, and the Big Day Kuna and the clothing in this week's Parsha. Now we're gonna have a problem with that in a second after we read through this, but you see, a pasuk mem hey is coming to Shachanti B'soch Bnei Israel. That God is certainly going to dwell in the Mishkan, for sure. People will see that, they'll see a cloud, etc. But even amongst Bnei Israel, the Makalos Israel, Yeshkanas Yisruya Afagav She'enu B'galui. And that is, the idea is that when the Bnei Israel gather, my Shechina will be present, even if it is not revealed. And that is something which we like to think is still going on. It's still going on, even when we don't have the Mishkan, when we are gathering and we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, we like to feel that the Shechina is present. And this is the heart and soul of what it means to be a committed or at least a believing Jew, is that God is there. He's a Mashkiach, and he's watching over, and he is filling the needs. Now, what the needs are, what we think our needs are versus what God thinks our needs are, obviously, in many cases, there might be a disconnect there, but certainly the idea that we turn to God and that He provides for us in the way that each of us needs on an individual or a family or whatever basis, that is essential to the beliefs of the Jew. Okay, so v'yadu k'ani Hashem, or avtacha, sh'yedu v'yavinu k'ani Hashem Elohim. This is a promise that they will know and understand that I'm Hashem. These are things which I've talked about before. Mishnah Avos Tanan Chavivin Yisrael Shenigru Banan Lamakom. In Avos, maybe you're familiar with this Mishnah, that Bnei Israel are beloved because they are called the children of God. Chiba Yiseiran Adaslam Shenigru Banan Lamakom. There's an extra love given to them because they're called the children of God. Perush Elu Nikrayim Banim Velo Hodiyim Hakasav Shekenu. There are plenty who are called children, and the pasuk did not tell them that they are called children of God. So there's love, but there's a greater love when you are told that you are children of God. It's one thing to understand that you're children of God, and every religion, every nation in the world says, we're God's children, but the Bnei Israel were told it, and that brings it to a higher level. And that is something which we should what we should live up to, that's for sure. And hopefully it should be a source of pride for us. Okay, the last thing which I wanted to focus on is, what I kind of hinted to a moment ago, is the problem. With that being the bracket and the tail end of this image of the instructions for the Mishkan, because you turn the page, after the closing of all of these instructions, what do you have the instruction for? This moment is Be'ach. Now, this was not a new thing, okay? This has always been here. And so the question is, why? The small Mizbeach is told to us after the instructions for the Mishkan are closed. Now, by the way, in next week's Parsha, Parsha's Kisisa, we're told about the Kior, the wash basin. So, I mean, why is that? It's really a clearly closing psukim of the concept of So why is it here? So we're going to close the Chumash now. We're going to see what the Netziv says with respect to why this is here. Okay. So it's just this this comment, Pasuk Aleph, and then we'll be done for the day. Zbech Miktar Torahs. Kardarshu Baraba. Baraba means in Midrash Rabba. Midrash Rabba. This one's Vayikra. So there's a koach hakadusha. There's a strength of holiness which emerges from this mizbeach, just as it does from the larger mizbeach. Now, when we think about the Mishkan and we think about the service of the Mishkan, more than anything, we should really think about the role of the mizbeach and the daily offerings, for example. But what else was used daily? Well, I mean, the menorah was lit daily, but the mizbeach of Ketores was utilized daily as well. There's the question. Many of the commentaries have addressed why is the instruction for this mizbeach delayed? Nisacher shemecha l'acher kol ha'masim, right? Where does it belong? It belongs where the Aron, Menorah, Shulchan, right? All of its brothers or sisters, however you want to define the Kalim, that are going to be in the Mishkan, this is where the instruction for this Mizbeach should be. So he references Ramban and Sforno, who clearly addressed this question. Okay, so that's homework. But now he's going to say what he says. V'hanir lahagdim dikamosh mitzinu yom perak terpakalpi daf mem dalid diktoros mechaperas alashin hara. The Ketores' job is to atone for Lashon Hara, which is one of the worst sins that can be done between man and fellow man. Kach ikar shehu avon hachamur. Oh, it is the worst. Okay, right? What, murder is not? It's a different kind of murder. Okay. Kach ikar toelas Ketores la'alo zicharon shel maase. I think that's what it is. That what's it doing? It's on the one hand bringing to atone for the sin of Lashon Hara, but it's also meant to elevate and maybe even to inspire the idea of Gemilas Chasadim. Gemilas Chasadim, that's what Nibshal Lubsamim. Right? The idea of, when we think about something which is really sweet smelling as a metaphor, we want to think about the kindness that we can do. Right? Just what was the metaphor that we saw earlier? Kaftor Vaferach, right? With regard to a chiddush, so gemilas chasadim is viewed as just something, you know, just a beautiful smell. Skip to the next line. Mishamachi ketores yamala zichrona biyichud. So amala zichrona biyichud. So the ketores is just a high level of that. You sowed right lizeh. Hobiyom reish perk tarp bekalpi. Amar Rabbi Yishuv and Karcha sachli zakein echad pam achas alachti b'shilo veherachti reach ketores mibein koselah. He says I came to Shilo. Rabbi Yishuv and Karcha said this old guy told me that he went to Shilo and he smelled the smell of the Ketores from between the walls. Right? How long was there a Beis HaMikdash and Ketores? He says, well, he's counting two Beit HaMikdash. Okay, because this is Rabbi Yishuv and Karcha. What's Rabbi Yishuv and Karcha? Rishu ben Karcha isn't that the son of Rabbi Akiva? So he's a Tana, and he's a Tana, but he's living at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So he's adding, therefore, the two Batei Mikdash. He's saying it's more than 800 years when we had Ketores burning, in just adding, according to the tradition that says that each Beis HaMikdash was 400 plus years. The historians have a different view of the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but Shiloh was only 300 years. So this, whatever remains of the smell of Ketores should be much more pungent. Where
in Yerushalayim,
and yeah. yet he's smelling it in Shiloh, and he never said anything about smelling it in Yerushalayim. El b'shvil sheyisod Yerushalayim haya b'kedushas haTorah kiyachsiv kimitzion teitzei Torah, because the yisod, the essence of Yerushalayim, was the holiness of the Torah. It says kimitzion teitzei Torah. Mashen ki b'shiloh shay b'shev Yosef lo yamei olam rov Torah. Yosef's tribe was never big, Torah progenitors. What were they? The Kohanim in the Mishkan, in Shiloh, they weren't such great scholars. Okay, they knew what they had to do, but they weren't such great scholars. They didn't know that a czar is allowed to do shechita. He says, what was Yosef, Shevet Yosef's calling card? That they were gomlei chasadim.
How so? They sustained.
He doesn't go into that. Doesn't explain. But they were gomlei chesed.
Okay.
Maybe it's because Yosef himself was a gomel chesed with the way that he was to his father, with the way that he took care of his brothers. Right, I'll take care of you. Okay, so. He's saying that this is where I discuss this in explaining that passage. That there were 3 mil away from the Mishkan of Shiloh was where they were bringing the whatever offerings to the Pesel, the idol of Micha. And what happened was, Bikshu Malachi Asharis Lidachos. The Malachi Asharis were objecting. They said, "This is not sustainable. We have Avodah Zarah here, and you have the Mishkan here, and the two aromas are combining." Mm-hmm. And Yatza Baskol, the Baskol says, "Al tidchu, leave it alone. Sheish b'hem gemilas chasadim shel achnasas orchim, because they have gemilas chasadim of bringing in guests. L'chaura tamua." But because there's Achnas HaZorchim, so Pesel Micha is allowed to withstand and be in the same relative space as Mishkan Shiloh. El Abal Alameh, the Kevan the Ikar Askara Shemeshiloh Hayagmilas Chasadim V'zeh Hayagam BePesel Micha. You know, you can be critical of Pesel Micha and say, they're doing whatever they're doing to this idol. But the fact of the matter is, what was Pesel Micha? People came in, they were welcomed, they were given, you could say whatever you want about Esav, but Esav is given a heck of a lot of credit for being a mechabed avim and whatever other mitzvahs he fulfilled. So, you can be critical, but you can't take away from the chesed that somebody does. So the Ketores stands as a reminder of Yisrael's Gemilas Chesed. And so that's why we have this concept that the Ketores makes one wealthy. Now, by the way, I was thinking about this as I was reading this. We have a concept that the lap of the Sandak is supposed to is serves kind of like the Mizbeach HaKetores, and that's one of the reasons why, at least in the Ashkenazi community, the role is not shared within a family. So in other words, siblings in the Ashkenazi community are not supposed to have the same sandik. So that's why, if parents, Baruch Hashem, have both of their fathers alive, and they have more than two sons, typically they'll give baby number one, sandik will be one of the grandfathers, baby number two, sandik will be a grandfather that wasn't sandik the first time, and then baby number three, his sandik will be somebody else. Okay, why? Because you want to spread the wealth around. That's really what the Ketores is all about. Mishum de kamod gemilas chasadim, achelas peres belamazeh, umeasheres lebealeh, the gemilas chasadim is supposed to bring, these are supposed to be the rewards of gemilas chasadim, is fruit in this world, and it enriches those who do it. Kach Ketores, habala azkir zchusa, measheres lehamazkir. So the Ketores is supposed to serve as a source of wealth as well. In way, and, we've talked about Parnassa and how Parnassa is embedded in the Mishkan. We need kamo mitzvahs shebein adam l'shamayim u'balos apia Torah v'chusav zman uva'ofen amasa. And just as the mitzvahs, which are between man and heaven, they're given boundaries based on the Torah and its rules. Zman uva'ofen amasa, right? That sometimes it's dependent on time. It's dependent on how it's done. Kach haya rotzui damim Sha'al Mizbeach, Mubal Kol Karban, Kamazos, Rigos Matanos. So the Haritzoi Damim, rather, the way in which the blood was used on the Mizbeach also has rules which needs to be followed. But Chumog Minas Chasadim, Ein Lo Shir Gvul, Kach Toras Ein Lo Shir Kamal Hakir. So with the outside Mizbeach, there are rules. Right? Some things don't get burned there. Some things, you know, don't get sprinkled there. But when it comes to, you know, what's the small Mizbeach being used for? It's being used for one basic ritual, which is the burning of the Torahs. How much Torahs? No, Ein Lo Shir. There's no limit. You can throw as much Torahs as you want. Come lock here. And it's like Gemilas Chesedin. But is there a limit to how much Gemilas Chesed that somebody can do? No. So the Chachamim should net Lo Shir prosper Shacharis, who prosper in our brothers. So the Chachamim established a limitation, but Midoraisa, there isn't a limitation. So now he says it's explained why the inside Mizbeach is separated from all the other Kalim. Because everything else is close to the Aron, which is the source of the Koach HaTorah, the strength of the Torah. Because it's not dependent on the rules of the Torah. He says it's not limited in its time and space by the rules of the Torah, because it doesn't have rules. It has a rule, it says what it's used for, but that's its function. But in terms of how it's used, it's representative of Gemilas Chasadim. Now, we can take this a step further, right? Because Eil Dvarim Shein Lahem Shiur, what's the first one? Talmud Torah. Hapeav, no. Eil Dvarim Shein Lahem Shiur. Hapeav, Kurim, Arian, right? If it's some Torah. If it's some Torah, no, hold on. Eil Dvarim Shein Lahem Shiur. Hapeav, Kurim, Arian, 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 Yaskamash based major chakras for Arabis, Vachnos as Orchim, Vikur Cholim, Vachnos as Kala, Lavayas Amaz, Vion Tfila, Vavashalam, and Demachavi Robes. So, what are all those things? Okay, see, Samantar Kanekul. So, there you see exactly, you know, that is, I think, a great support to the image that he's trying to say here, is that the Mizbeach HaKetores is representative of the concept of Gemilas Chasadim, but it's outside of the box of everything else. And so, what does it stand opposite? If you know the setup of the Mishkan, you know that, you know, if this is the Mishkan, and I'm doing it from my perspective. So in the back you have the Aron, and the Aron is in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Here you have the Shulchan. Here you have the Menorah. And where's the Mizbeach HaKetores? Here, directly opposite the Aron. So there, maybe that's the point, that everything else is supposed to be limited to, however, the koach and the ashpa and the strength which comes from the Torah Shebichsav, but the Gemilas Chasadim goes above and beyond. And so because it's above and beyond, it can't be confined to the space of everything else which is representative of just of mere Torah Shebichsav, because there isn't a limit here. So maybe you can say, for Torah study there isn't a limit, but the Torah rules are confining, and that's the case. Mm-hmm. With Gemilas Chasadim, there is no confining. There's Ein La Sof, Cholam Arba Areza Meshubach. And so, yeah, we can compare that to Talmud Torah, but not to the rules of the Torah. And so this is why it's above and beyond the rules which are confining, or confined, but this is above and beyond, because Gemilas Chasadim is above and beyond, and that's what this small Mizbeach represents. It represents Gemilas Chasadim, because just as Gemilas Chesed has no limitation, the Torah has no limitation, it's something which is shared by all, everybody has an investment in it, and that's actually, I don't remember if it's the Mishnah Berurah or the Ramah who makes the comment. He says, why do we share the Sandik role? Because everybody could technically and theoretically burn the Ketores. Chadashim laKetores, he says. New people bring the Ketores all the time. It's never the same person who's bringing it, because it's available to everybody, similar to the way the Talmud Torah is available to everybody, but this is a deeper symbolism which is above and beyond that kind of limitation of time and space. I think it's a beautiful explanation for why the Mizbeach HaKetores is outside of all the other instructions of the Mishkan.